Let's see here. Fire protection?
Check.
Uniforms, mats, and restroom products?
Check.
First aid cabinets and safety products?
Check.
Great! So it sounds like we're ready to go.
No. When I said check, I meant we still need to check on all those things.
Just call Cintas. They can handle all of it. It's what they do.
Okay. Call Cintas. Check. I mean, got it.
Oh, I'm ready!
Learn how Cintas can help you get ready for the workday. Visit Cintas.com.
To this week's edition of the Backline Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today? And we have a good one, a huge one today. A huge show for the Golfaholics and Back Niners there. How are you today?
We do have a lot to talk about tonight, Carlos. But I am really confused. Somebody's got to call the FBI or the CIA or one of those three-letter alphabet soup government agencies. There has been a complete miscarriage of justice, and I think it was a Russian plot. I think the Russians had to be involved. I'm calling for a congressional investigation. Somebody call Fox News, whatever. We need to check this thing out. What in the wide, wild world of sports happened in Phoenix last week? We must get to the bottom of this. Kevin Sutherland won the Charles Schwab Championship and the Cup both. How did that happen? Carlos, you got to explain this to me. I'm totally confused. I'm not very smart. I don't get it.
You're telling me that Bernhard Langer didn't win it?
We gave it to Bernhard two months ago. We gave it to him. They can't take that away from him. We already gave it to him.
No. This is the biggest. No, I mean, forget about Trump and the Russians. Forget about Clinton and the DNC. Forget about it. This is huge. Keep going. I mean, we have to investigate this.
We're going to talk about it. We got to. But after we sort this all out, we're going to be asking several prominent golf people about the comments Lawine Mayer made last week about Pete Cowan not wanting to teach women golfers to avoid any sexual conflict questions. So, Carlos, I can't wait. We got a lot of golf to talk about. As always, let's go.
Let's go. And like you said, that big practice range topic is on gender bias and sexual harassment. And it's so huge that we have big reinforcements. We have interviews with Steve Eubanks, Wendy Doolin, Kathy Gildersleeve-Jensen, and, of course, we have to take our European golf guru, our colleague and friend Kieran Clark, his take from the European side. So you don't want to miss that. It's going to be a huge topic that we're going to be talking about. But, as usual, we start with the weekend backswing, where every week Fred and I recap the weekend's action. And I am still in shock how Bernhard Langer, he won seven times this year, and he won two out of the three on the playoffs. He still didn't win the Cup Championship. How can that happen?
Can you say points reset?
No,
that
I can't.
This has to be the stupidest thing in the world. It's like a joke. I mean, it's made a joke of the Champions Tour, really. Kevin Sutherland is a nice guy. I mean, he's a great guy. You know, it's wonderful. But he doesn't win a Champions Tour event all year, Carlos, not all year, until the final event of the season, the Charles Schwab Cup Championship, and wins the cup along with it. I'm calling BS here right now, okay? Bernhard Langer won seven times, including three of the five majors, plus, as you said, he won the first two Charles Schwab Cup playoff events. How is he not the best player on the Champions Tour for the year? How does he not get the $1 million? I think he stole Kevin Sutherland just stole $1 million right out of Bernhard Langer's pocket. I'd be furious if I were him. Here's what the definition of the Charles Schwab Cup says. The Charles Schwab Cup is a season-long, earnings-based competition launched in 2001 to determine the PGA Tour champion's top player. Well, if it's a season-long, it says season-long right in there. And it says earnings-based. Bernhard Langer won more than twice as much as Kevin Sutherland. He won seven times more events than Kevin Sutherland. I don't know. You know what? There's no way Kevin Sutherland is a Champions Tour's top player this year. Not even close. Yeah, he had a nice season, 15 top 10s, five of those were top fives. But Charles Schwab Cup winner? I don't think so. The Charles Schwab Cup should have been handed to Bernhard Langer 6 weeks ago when we already gave it to him. We conceded it to him. After dominating the Champions Tour all season, Langer made the mistake of starting slow on Friday. He began the week with a 71 and improved every day with scores of 68, 64 to finish at 10 under par. Sutherland, on the other hand, opened the first round with a 69, fired a second round 63, and then carded a 66 on Sunday for the win at 15 under par. He finished just one stroke better than Vijay Singh and Lee Jansen. Langer finished five shots back of Sutherland, who was actually fifth in the Charles Schwab Cup ranking after the reset. Langer ended up finishing second behind Sutherland, and Scott McCarron, who finished the week T9, fell down to third in the final standings. Here's a surprise for you. Looky here. John Daly finished T4 at 13 under with David Frost. He was tied to David Frost and David Toms. Old Johnny's still out there. I know the deal in the playoffs is that anyone in the top five can win the whole enchilada if they win the tournament. But I have questions, Carlos. I got questions. Why was this only a three-round event? 72 holes makes a real tournament. Shouldn't this have been a four-round event? Wasn't this big enough to be four rounds? We're only talking 36 players here. Why couldn't they have played four rounds? Even with the points reset, with the more than double points lead Langer had on the rest of the field, and by winning the first two playoff events, he should have won this thing. It should have been just given to him. This is not a good thing for the playoff concept. It does not reflect the season-long aspect of who was the best player all year. It ends up, Carlos, just demonstrating what a joke this whole playoff system really is. It doesn't work for golf. Kieran's been saying it all these years. I think I'm finally beginning to believe it. This was like the end for me. This is just stupid. This serves no purpose whatsoever.
Oh, man. No. You know whose fault is this? Bernhard Langer. It's his fault.
Well,
he said it. He said it. I mean, he was on the PGA Tour Champions Policy Board when they said, well, we're going to try this out. And he said, I'm sure it's not perfect, but, you know, it may be like the FedEx Cup. They had to adjust it two or three times to make it interesting, but also make it a little fair. But definitely, this is not fair at all. Oh, man, this was robbery immediately right there in daylight in front of the cops. This was the worst thing that I have ever seen. No way, Bernhard Langer. And that's not the only thing. Kevin Sutherland, you know when was the last time he won?
Yeah, 2002 or something. It's been a while.
Yeah. In 2002. No way. I mean, he in 4 years in the Champions Tour, not a single win. But he won when it mattered most, and he made the best out of it. But, oh, man, I'm just at a loss of words, and that's really, really difficult to have in this case. 15 out of 23 starts, yes, he was in the top 10, but I can't. Well, congratulations to Kevin. I really feel bad for Bernhard. I mean, we 2 months ago we said it's over. There's nothing anybody else can do, and look what happens. Well, I guess that after what happened to John Ram, anything can happen now. So I won't be surprised. But hey, there was action also on the European Tour. The race to Dubai, Medbank Challenge, second out of three, also on the finals there for the race to Dubai. And, you know, starting three shots back, Brendan Grace, he fired a bogey-free final round of 66. He finished one shot clear of his playing partner, Scott Jamieson, and moved into the top 10 in the race to Dubai rankings. I mean, it's just only one more. The DP World Championship is coming up this weekend. Great moment to be in the top 10. The world number 44 delighted the home crowds during a strong field there at Gary Player Country Club, taking the seventh Rolex Series title and becoming the first winner to hit all 18 greens in regulation in an European Tour event since 2014. He had a raider. I mean, he was there on point, 18 greens, all in regulation. He was in the final group alongside Scott Jamieson and Victor Dubuisson and picked up three shots on the front nine with birdies on the second, the fifth, and the sixth holes. And then the gap closed further when Jamieson double bogeyed the eighth to hand the lead to the other playing partner, who was Victor Dubuisson. All three of them then birdied the 10th, but by the 15th, there was a three-way tie at the top thanks to a brilliant up-and-down recovery. It was brilliant, the one that Scott Jamieson did, and a more straightforward birdie game from Brendan Grace. Then Dubuisson, who's really coming back into form. We haven't really talked a lot about him, but he's here on the race to Dubai in the finals. He dropped out of the running with a bogey on the 15th. And then Grace, he missed his opportunity to go one clear. He wouldn't make the same mistake at the next. Though, I mean, Jamieson made the par of the week after hitting the hospitality units from the tee. He was four all the time. Ever since he hit it four, watch out, it's going there. Hospitality was just covering everywhere. And the par 3-16, but a huge 40-foot putt from Grace put him in the driving seat. Then he parred the next two holes, and the victory was his. Grace made six birdies in his bogey-free round of 66. He's now an eight-time European Tour winner. He's now only behind Ernie Els, Retief Goosen, and Charles Schwartzel in South African wins on the European Tour. He's a 29-year-old and has revealed that he found out on Wednesday that he's having a baby boy. No wonder. He said, I need to win some money. There's a baby coming. It was the first time since Trevor Immelman in 2007 that this event saw a home winner. Hao Tong Lee posted the lowest score of the week with an 8-under par 64 and finished solo fourth. Martin Keimer finished solo fifth. Lee Westwood and Darren Fichard tied for sixth. Matthew Fitzpatrick and Louis Oosthuizen tied for 8th. Tommy Fleetwood and Graham Storm tied for 10th. Other notable finishers, Alex Noren, he really has gone down in the latter part of the year. Charles Schwartzel, Gene Lowry, Søren Kjeldsen, Thornbjørn Olsen, and Juice Leuthen all tied for 12th. Tyrell Hatton, Bernd Wiesberger, and Ian Poulter, T19. Andy Sullivan, another one that is disappearing, finished 65th. And American Peter Uihlein, he retired ill from the first round. He's in the top 10, 20 in the race to Dubai ranking, so that was a really, really bad, shocking discovery for him. He had played a 70-30 first round, so he was right there. Brendan Grace now moves to 10th in the race to Dubai standings with just one event left this week, the DP World Tour Championship. Fred, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the tour final in a bit, but with his 10th place finish, Tommy Fleetwood remains on top with Justin Rose and Sergio Garcia, the only man that can overtake him for the Race to Dubai Championship.
Yeah, Fleetwood's only got about $260,000 lead. So, Rose can easily overtake him in that thing. Fleetwood's going to have to finish high if Rose is in contention. Lee Westwood had a pretty good week again, and there's that guy, Matthew Fitzpatrick. He's right up there again. And you said Martin Keimer was fifth. We haven't heard much out of him for this year, so maybe he'll be looking for a good year next year. But, they're winding that down. We're going to talk about the DP World Finals here when we preview next week's event. So, European Tour is just about ready to wrap it up. Hey, Carlos, the PGA Tour was down in Mexico for the old
Where?
Classic.
Mexico.
Mexico. Mexico.
Mexico.
PC at the old Classic at Mayakoba. Second time the tour visited Mexico this year. They don't go for 40 years. All of a sudden they're going every other month, it seems like, to Mexico. Pat Kazir remained steady, posting pars to outduel Ricky Fowler down the stretch at the old Classic. He punched his ticket to the Tournament of Champions in Hawaii in January, plus the Masters and the Players' Championship next year. Kazir won twice on the Web.com Tour in 2015, had a solid rookie season in 2016. He finished 99th in the FedEx Cup this year with only one runner-up and three top 10 finishes against 14 missed cuts and 28 starts. He missed half his cuts. Not that good. He has been a different player this fall, however. After missing the cut to Safeway, he finished T10 at Sanderson Farms, T4 in Vegas, and now the win. He takes over the lead in the FedEx Cup race with just the RSM Classic remaining in the wraparound schedule this week. He started fast with a first-round 62, added a 70 on Friday, and carded 66-67 in the final two rounds on the weekend. They had to play 36 holes on Sunday due to the heavy rains that had halted play on Friday and bothered him on Saturday. He took a one-stroke lead over Ricky Fowler into the final round and was able to hold on, even with Ricky making a charge with three birdies on his final nine holes at 13, 16, and 17. Kazir had opened up a three-shot lead at the turn by carding three birdies, no bogeys on the front, and added one lone birdie at 11 before parring out for the win. Fowler became a late entry into Mayakoba to fill a once every 4 years appearance requirement on the PGA Tour. After the President's Cup, Fowler had been taking it easy and not been playing much golf. He can enjoy a week off and head over to Albany in the Bahamas early to play in Tiger's Hero World Challenge next week. Siwoo Kim had another good week with a solo third-place finish. Charles Howell and Martin Pilar tied for fourth. Charles Howell, he always seems to do well in this wraparound. This fall season's made for him. He makes his money. He guarantees he's got his card. And then after the first of the year, you'd never hear from him again, maybe one or two events. But, man, he makes his money in the fall. Ryan Moore, Scott Brown, and John Oda were right behind. Five players tied for ninth. Alex, there's Alex Cech again. He had a good week the week before. The veteran continued his good play. Russell Knox, Emiliano Grillo, Abraham Answer, and Michigan's Brian Stewart all tied for ninth. Pat Kazir broke through for his first win. Will that give him the confidence to contend more often on the PGA Tour, Carlos?
Oh, you might remember a couple of years ago I had picked him as the Web.com Tour Player of the Year, and he did came through, but he really, on that rookie year, he wasn't ready. I think that year that he had last season, it's so difficult to say last season. We're still in 2017. Man, how can we say this is a new season? I can't get my mind around this wraparound season. But anyway, yeah, last season, Kazir didn't do well, but I think he's learning it off. Those par saves that he made at 12, 13, and 14 were par saves. They were nerveless, even though he was a little nervy at the end because Ricky Fowler was really, really playing. And you said that he took it easy on the fall and he hasn't been playing. He was taking a vacation here. I mean, he just played quietly. He went with those that run at the end. And now he has been a 12-time PGA Tour runner-up. 12 times Ricky Fowler has finished second. And now he overtakes.
Do they give you an award? Do they give you an award for that? So, like, I mean, he has the career Grand Slam runner-up, right? For majors, right? Do they give you a yellow jacket for that or anything? Or, you know, a green tie maybe or something?
Yeah, it should be a yellow. Well, or maybe an orange. He likes orange. So there they should give him something like that. Yeah. But, no, Pat and Kassir, I think he could be in for a good year. Him and Justin Hadley are playing really well right now at the start of this new season. So those are two guys to look out for next.
They're probably playing the best of anybody right now, Kadir and Justin Hadley.
Hadley, yeah. So we'll see. I mean, the RSM is this weekend, and we'll talk a little bit about that in just a bit. But now let's finish our wrap-up of the weekend backs, being talking about the LPGA, where Shan-Shan Fong, she shot the hottest player in the world in women's golf right now, Shan-Shan Fong. She shot a 2-under par 70 in the final round and won the Blue Bay LPGA by one stroke over another player that is really hot as well. It's Maria Yutanagarn, who was second at 8-under. This was another first for Fong. I mean, last year she became the first golfer, male or female, from China to win an Olympic medal. But with this win, Fong becomes the first top-ranked golfer, male or female, from China. That became official yesterday. Yeah, we had to check because we already know that there was one time that they said this player became first, but it didn't. So I checked today. She's still number one. With both players tied at 9-under through 12 holes, the 13th hole proved the difference as Fong sank a 20-foot birdie putt, while playing partner Maria missed a 10-foot par putt for a two-shot swing. Maria quickly rebounded in the next, sinking a 6-foot downhill putt for birdie as Fong missed a 4-footer and had to settle for par. Then Fong gave the side more chances to get even on the 15 and 16 holes after missing makeable birdie putts. I couldn't believe it. But then Maria could only answer with pars. She didn't take charge. At the penultimate hole, which is the 168-yard par 3, where Fong was short of the green and made a bogey 4, Maria again failed to capitalize, missing an 8-foot par putt that would have deadlocked that score. Maria's woes continued as a last, where Fong could only muster a par 5 with a 3-foot birdie putt facing her. To even the match, Maria pulled it left to miss out on the playoff. Oh, that was so disheartening. I mean, in a display of sportsmanship, I mean, Shan-Shan said that she really wanted Maria to make that putt at the final hole and found it difficult to watch when Maria failed to make that 3-foot par putt. Fang said Saturday, after finishing a 9-under, and I am going to quote her, she said, "I finished first in China, so I actually claimed the world number one in front of all the people at home. I'm really happy about that, and I hope all the Chinese are going to be watching me. Hopefully, there will be more Chinese getting on the tours and more world number ones coming up from China." End of quote. Fong, who won last week in Japan, became the first back-to-back winner this year and earned $315,000 for her third title of the season. She joins now I.K. Kim as the only three-time winners this year. Maria, who is the older sister of world number 9, Arya Yutanagarn, who finished 9 strokes off the face, lamented another opportunity lost to win her first LPGA title. She just said that she was trying to give herself a chance on the final hole. She really suffered when she didn't do it. LPGA Rookie of the Year Sungyeon Park, who became the world number one last Tuesday, didn't last that long. She closed with an even par 72 to finish equal third with second round leader South African Ashley Buhai, who shot 73, and Americans Megan Kang with a 68 and Jessica Corder with a 75. They finished 5 strokes back. First round leader Sung Young Yu finished tied for 7th with Sandra Gall and Nayeon Choi. Lisette Salas, Austin Ernest, Mi Young Lee, and Yoon Lee tied for 10th. Other notable finishers, Michelle Wee and Arya Yutanagarn, T16. Karini Kerr, solo 18. Morgan Pressel, T21. Min Jae Lee and Asahara Munoz, T25. Anna Nordqvist and Haruno Mura, T42. Ye Lee was the top amateur as the Chinese teenager closed with a 77 to finish equal 53rd in the 81-player field. Fred, going into the season's final tournament, the Rolex rankings are up for grabs. Shan-Shan Fong is number one with an 8.46 average points. Sungyeon Park is 8.44, just 0.02 behind Chan Chan on second place. And Soyeon Ryu is third with 8.43, which is just 0.03 behind Chan Chan Fang. Anything can happen. The world number one is up for grab as well in the race to the CME Globe finishing this weekend.
Yeah, I think they're more concerned about the $1 million bonus and the $500,000 first prize next week than they are about the number one ranking. But you're right, it doesn't seem like anybody can kind of grab a hold of that thing right now. You've got really five or six women that are playing pretty good. I think you just had two multiple winners this year on the LPGA Tour, right? Shan Chang and Kang, maybe?
We had more. The thing is that they are the ones that had three. We had more. The thing
three.
Is they were the
okay,
only
they
ones
had three.
To win three.
Yeah. Right, okay. You got it. But, I don't see anybody really jumping up and dominating the tour. I really thought Lexi was going to do it. I thought this was going to be her year, but, she played pretty well, but not quite good enough. So maybe next year. I don't know. We'll see. But there's a big one coming next week. We're going to talk about it. So they'll wrap up the season there. Hey, Carlos, speaking of the women, the U.S. Women's Mid-Am that was originally scheduled for Florida down by Naples, but it was during the hurricane and right after the hurricane, and the course became unplayable, so they had to postpone it, and they've moved it from Naples here to Champions Golf Club in Houston. Well, it's finally being played this week. Katie Miller of Gannett, Pennsylvania, Lauren Greenleaf of Virginia, and Marissa Marr from San Francisco all tied for medalist honors on Sunday after the first two rounds, and they all won their first matches. However, Marr is the only one that has made it into the quarterfinals. The round of 16 was today, and the winners were Courtney McKinn from Raleigh, North Carolina, Mary Jane Heaston from Naples, Shannon Johnson from Norton, Massachusetts, Olivia Herrick from Roseville, Minnesota, Kelsey Chug from Salt Lake City, Haley Hammond from Mooresville, North Carolina, and Marissa Marr, as I mentioned, from San Francisco, and then Amanda Jacobs from Portland, Oregon. Now, they will play in the morning tomorrow. They'll play the quarters, and they'll play the semis, and then they'll have the finals the following day. So they're going to wrap that up a little bit later this week. That's the USGA U.S. Women's Mid-Am. That'll be the final USGA event of the year, Carlos.
And with that, we'll wrap up our weekend backspin. Now we're going to talk about what's going to happen this upcoming weekend. And we have two tours that are ending, the LPGA with the CME Group Tour Championship, and also the race to Dubai on the European Tour comes to an end. So, Fred, let's start talking about the LPGA and the CME Group Tour Championship. What is going to happen in the finals for the LPGA?
Yeah, as we said, everything's winding down. We were just alluding to it a minute ago, but this is this LPGA, this CME Group Championship that finishes out the year for the women. It's in Naples at Tiburon. They had to come home from China this week. They'll compete for one of the biggest purses all year. Lexi leads the money list, but coming off consecutive wins in Japan and China, Fang is the hottest player right now. With $500,000 for the winner from the $2.5 million purse, plus the $1 million race to the CME Globe bonus on the line, there is a bunch of money up for grabs this week down in Florida. In 2016, last year, Charlie Hall captured her first title on tour at the CME Group Tour Championship by holding off playing partner Soyeon Ryu to win by two strokes. Hall carded a final round bogey-free 66 to finish the week at 19 under par, set a new tournament scoring record previously held by Christy Kerr at 17 under. If the weather cooperates, expect low scoring again this week for the LPGA Tour finale. The tournament begins on Thursday and can be seen Thursday, Friday, and Saturday on Golf Channel, 4:30 to 6:30. The final round will be carried by ABC from 1 to 4. Carlos, who's your money on? Who are you thinking looks good for this thing?
I think Chan Chan Fang. She's looking for her third consecutive win, along to with Ibanez. I mean, Sungyeon Park is looking to take back the number one spot. Sungyeon Ryu, of course, still sort of the top three players. But you have to think about some other players to watch out for, like Lexi Thompson. The win will get her the bonus and the Vera Trophy, which is at stake. There are some things at stake here, and I'm going to get to them there. Brooke Henderson, a win gets her the $1 million bonus. Some other long shot picks, not likely, but it's not impossible. Hey, Maria Tanager, eventually she will have to finish one, right? Why not here? She has four top fives in her last five starts. I would say Lisette
Salas. She's been playing really well. Really well.
She has to finish one sometime. Now, Lisette Salas, she's playing the best golf of her career. She has five top tens in her last six starts. The other was a 13th finish. And Sarah Jean Smith, who has three consecutive top 15 finishes, she's also another player to be watching out. I mean, there's a lot of stake this week besides the CME Trophy. Like you said, $1 million will go to the winner of the race to CME Globe. Lexi Thompson currently leads. The Rolex Player of the Year is still up for grabs. Soyeon Ryu currently has the lead by a very narrow margin over Changchun Fang, Sungyeon Park, and Lexi Thompson. The winner receives a Hall of Fame point. That's very important. The Vera Trophy is about as tight as it could be, as Lexi Thompson has a very narrow lead over Sungyeon Park. It still remains a mystery as to who will finish the season number one in the Rolex rankings. Like I said, Changchun Fang, Sungyeon Park, and Soyeon Ryu, and even Lexi Thompson. They are all tightly bunched up and have mathematical chances of finishing on top. So this is all a great finish. And I have a question for you.
Yep.
Do you know this is the fourth year of the CME Group Tour Championship? In the previous years, 3 years, only one player has finished in the top 10 each time. Can you name her?
Well, my guess would be So Young, but I'm really not sure about that. But it's probably So Young Yu, but I'm not sure about that.
It's Lydia Ko. She's the only player to finish in the top 10 in each of the first 3 years. As you might remember, she won the first one in 2014. 2015, she finished seventh, and last year she finished 10th. She's the only one to have finished in the top 10 each time. So any final words
she's
on that before
in.
I talk about
She's coming in at 12. So, I mean, she can move up into the top 10 pretty easily with a high finish. I saw her.
Not a chance to win, so, you know, but we'll see.
Yeah, I don't see her winning it, but you know, she could jump into the top 10 with a high finish. You know, I was surprised to see her that high on the list, really. It doesn't seem like she's had that great year. But, see, there again, she just dominated so much for so long, we just came to expect that. And even though she plays along and better than average, way better than average, we don't think it's that good. So, you know, another thing, Carlos, I was looking at, you know, when we think about the South Koreans dominating the LPGA Tour, in the top 15 on the CME Globe rankings, five women are from South Korea. Sang-young Park, So-young Yu, In-ji Chun, Se-young Kim, and I.K. Kim. But, you know, we got a couple New Zealanders. We got Anna Norquist from Norway. We got a couple from Thailand, which Maria and Aria are at 8 and 9. We got three Americans, Lexi, Christy Kerr, and Stacy. We got a Canadian with Brooke Henderson. We got Shang Shang from China. So, I mean, you know, the world is represented pretty well in this top 15. It's not just all South Korea. A little surprising, and only three women from the U.S. are in the top 15, but, you know, that's kind of the way it is right now. So it's truly an international tour, Carlos, and it's a big week. Anything else on that? I think that's all I've got.
That's all we have, and let's now move to the other tour championship, the tour final there on the European Tour. The Race to Dubai is coming to an end. It spans 47 tournaments in 26 countries across four continents. Talk about being international. This is a season-long competition to crown the European Tour's number one player. Celebrating that global connectivity of Dubai and the European Tour, the list of champions since 2009 reads like a who's who of modern era greats, including three-time winner Rory McIlroy and Henrik Stenson with two titles, as well as Martin Kaymer, Luke Donald, and Lee Westwood. This was formerly known as the Order of Merit. The points are accumulated based on prize money won, with the top 10 ranked players at the end of the season sharing a $5 million Race to Dubai bonus pool. The DP World Tour Championship will be played on the Earth Course, that's at the Jumeirah Golf Estates in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. The course yardage is a huge one. It's a 7,700 yards long course and plays at a par 72. The purse is $8 million. The top 10 players in the final standings are eligible to be paid that $5 million bonus. Rory McIlroy, who's number 11, and Henrik Stenson, who's number 13, are not playing, which means that Paul Waring and Ian Poulter will replace them in the field. Peter Uihlein, as you might remember, withdrew after the first round last week because of a stomach virus. He's number 18 in the Race to Dubai, and this is important because the top 20 get into the WGC Mexico Championship next year. Lee Westwood in 2009, McIlroy in 2012 and 15, and Stenson in 2013 are the only players to win the DP World Tour Championship and also claim the Race to Dubai title. The defending champion, here comes the name again, Matthew Fitzpatrick, he's going to be there. But you're asking me, Carlos, that's all fine and dandy, that's great, but who can still win the Race to Dubai? But most of that, how? Well, I'm here to tell you. With 47 events done and one to go, the Race to Dubai comes down to just three players. At the conclusion of this week's DP World Tour Championship, only Tommy Fleetwood, Justin Rose, or Sergio Garcia can be crowned the Race to Dubai Championship for 2017. But then again, what does each need to clinch the prestigious title as European Tour number one? It's not as difficult as when you go to the FedEx Cup when you need some doctor's degree and some science engineering master's to determine who can win and all the possibilities. This is real simple. What does Tommy Fleetwood need to do to win? It's really simple. The current Race to Dubai leader needs to equal or better Justin Rose's finishing position to stay ahead of him and claim the title. So as long as Rose doesn't finish in the top five and Sergio doesn't win, Fleetwood will be crowned European number one. What does Justin Rose have to do? Well, he's currently 256,737 points behind Fleetwood, and therefore will need to finish no worse than solo fifth in order to have any chance of winning the title. As long as Fleetwood doesn't win, a solo second place for Rose would be enough to secure his second Race to Dubai title. Memorably, as you might remember, he won the final event in the 2007 season in a playoff at the Volvo Masters at Valderrama to overtake Ernie Els and become the Order of Merit champion for the first time. Now, what would my man Sergio Garcia would need to do? Sergio, you know, the task is straightforward, but by no means easy. To have any chance of overtaking Justin and Tommy, you would need to win at the Jumeirah Golf Estates. That, along with Fleetwood finishing outside the top 20 and Rose finishing worse than solo fourth, that would see you complete one of the most dramatic final event comebacks the Race to Dubai has ever witnessed. But, hey, he won the Masters. Anything he can do now. He has finished inside the top 25 in all six of his appearances at this event, but has never finished in the top five. His best performance was a tied seventh place finish in the inaugural DP World Tour Championship in 2009. So, who can still finish in the top 10 in the Race to Dubai? As for the players who have a chance of sharing that $5 million Race to Dubai bonus pool, anyone in the top 45 in the rankings can still climb into the top 10. The only exceptions, of course, are Rory and Henrik, who are ranked 11 and 13 respectively, but they're not playing this week due to injury. So one tip that I'm going to give you about who has a good chance to win here, Justin Rose is definitely the hottest player of all those three. And if you want a tip about why, he holds the course record of 62 at the Earth course. So he did it in November 23rd of 2012. So he can do it. I think it's going to be Justin. Sorry, Sergio. I'm sorry. I'm going with Justin. I know now you might come and win it, but I couldn't pick you here. If you want to watch it on television, Golf Channel has all 4 days, but you're going to have to wake up really early. It's Thursday through Saturday. It's going to be 2 a.m. through 7 a.m. Eastern Time. And on Sunday, Fred, 1:30 a.m. to 6:30 a.m. also Eastern Time.
Yeah, there's a really good article that I read today. You know, basically said what Kieran's been saying for a long time. There's basically two European tours, the one that Rory McIlroy and Ian Poulter and Justin Rose plays, and the tour that all the other guys play. And they've only had one rookie that came out of the Challenge Tour this year, Eddie Pepperell, that has made it all the way through on the Race to Dubai. I think he's like 30th or something like that.
Julian Suri did it too. Julian Suri.
Okay.
The American.
So it's hard for these guys to come off the Challenge Tour the way with the Rolex Series. It's really been good. The Rolex Series has been good for the top names on the European Tour to keep them, to get them to come and play. But it's really made a separate kind of deal for the tour, and it's hard for the younger guys to earn enough money to keep their cars and actually move up. And then I got a question for you, Carlos. I see Patrick Reed. Is he playing this week in this thing?
Yes, he is, and he has a 12:15 a.m. Tee time. He's going to be playing alongside Matthew Southgate. Yes, he's playing there.
Yeah. So I know you had the European Tour membership, and I think he's like 18th or something. So now a little bit lower now. Uline's 18th. But he's 31st. So, So Patrick's getting around seeing some of the world. But Carlos, there's one other little tournament going on this week. After these two big ones on the LPGA Tour and the European Tour, we got this little thing going on down here in St. Simon's Island. It's Davis Love's RSM Classic. It's the final event of the PGA Tour wraparound season. It's just off the Georgia coast. This is Davis's event. And he's got there's a bunch of pros, a bunch of touring pros that actually live on St. Simon. So they always get those guys to play and some of others of Davis's buddies to come in. Mackenzie Hughes is defending champion. There's going to be 156 players field. So big field. They're going to start out on two courses on Thursday and Friday. $6.2 million purse. The winner's share is $1.11 mil. Both Davis and his son Drew are in the field. Last week's winner in Mexico, Pat Gazier, St. Simon's resident, and he's going to play. Cheston Hadley, we talked about him. Brent Snedeker, Zach Johnson, Bubba Watson, as well as a former winner here, Kevin Kisner. Someone else to watch this week, the reigning NCAA individual champion, Braden Thornberry, who's a junior at Ole Miss, gets a start on the PGA Tour at the RSM Classic. He's the number one ranked collegiate golfer and native of Mississippi with 8 career collegiate victories and was awarded the Fred Haskins Award. Even for a late season event, there are 10 former major champions in the field. Ernie Els, Patrick Harrington, Retief Guzman, Zach Johnson, Bubba, Stuart Sink, Davis, Graham McDowell, and Webb Simpson. You can see it all on your big screen Thursday through Sunday on the Golf Channel, 1:30 to 4:30. Carlos, and any comments on that?
No.
On the RSM?
No.
Okay.
No.
I'll just go right on. Okay, I'll do the promo here. Ohio Golf Journal offers golfaholics a diverse collection of topics that cover every area of golf. Tips to help your game, rules, explanations, equipment review, travel to the best golf resorts. History and opinion on current golf issues are covered every month. Ohio Golf Journal has some of the best golf writers that provide their knowledge on the game of golf. In the November issue, for example, we talk about the Amateur Golf Alliance and how it's helping amateur golfers. We list the things that the golfaholics are thankful for. We feature golf travel opportunities to Bryant Park in Greensboro, North Carolina, and Reynolds Lake Oconee on the Georgia-South Carolina state line. Plus, Ed Travis proposes that arguments to roll back a golf ball are dangerously wrong. So, visit OhioGolfJournal.com. Click on the cover, read the whole magazine, or click on any article that catches your eye. Don't forget to watch Backdown Report TV on Roku for a different take on the golf news. And, Carlos, I think next week I kind of have a penciled in that we're going to talk about maybe the golf rollback thing a little bit, and we might have Ed Travis on the show to talk about why it's kind of a stupid thing to even think about. But we're going to talk about it some more in the news, actually, also.
Are we going to be finally rolling back the golf or the golf ball or not?
No. There's going to be a hell of an argument for it. I'm going to tell you, they're lining up for a big fight right now. I don't want to give too much away. We're going to talk a little bit more about it in the Par 5 news.
So, no, wait. You at least have to say if you are for or against rolling back the ball.
I think it's stupid.
Really?
Real simple. Real short answer.
You're saying that Tiger Woods is stupid.
On some issues he is, yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty smart, you know.
How about Jack? Jack
Nicklaus. You know what? And you know my stance on Jack Nicklaus, okay? I mean, he is the man, okay? And I usually do not disagree with very much that guy says, but I really don't think. Do you remember the hassle there was when Ping went to Square Grooves? Remember that? When was that? Mm-hmm. In the mid-'80s, early '90s, whenever that was. Remember the hassle on that? The lawsuits that drug out for years until they just think what it would be if they tried to change the golf ball. What's that?
I wasn't born yet.
Yeah, right. yeah, I hear you.
Nah. We'll discuss that then next week. That's going to be a good one. But with that, we wrap up our four call, the quick previews for this weekend's action. And now we move to the Par 5 news, where we have five pieces of news for you that happened during this past week. And finally, after 3 weeks in a row, we are not going to be talking about Tiger Woods. Is that right? Not?
Nope.
No.
We bumped him. we'll talk about next week quite a bit, probably, because the hero's coming up. But we bumped him this week.
So let's talk about Nick Price, Fred. What happened to Nick and something about his seat? What's going on?
Well, we were just talking about rolling back the golf ball, and last week we had the story that the former PGA Tour professional and major champion Nick Price accepted a spot on the USGA's executive committee, which seemed kind of odd or strange at the time. You usually don't see tour professionals on the USGA executive committee. Those are usually attorneys, doctors, or some frumpy old guy who thinks he knows all about golf. A couple of questions come to mind. Why a PGA professional now, when Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, or a host of other worthy tour pros would probably have jumped at the offer to serve on one of golf's most important ruling bodies years ago? The USGA has always devoted itself to the amateur game and completely separated itself from professionals, except for those little tournaments, the U.S. Men's and Women's Opens. In fact, each year, they secretly pray for an amateur to win one of those things and tell the pros to go away. Is a big push coming for changing the golf ball or other equipment? Is bifurcation going to be studied closer? Will it become a reality? Well, Price was asked if part of his mission was going after the ball to shorten it. And he said, TBD, to be determined. He said, I have my thoughts, I know what I think, but I don't know what they think. I'm looking forward to working with the tech guys, and I have spent a little time with them. All I'm saying, this is an opportunity for us as professional golfers to do something with the USGA that's unique. Just last week, we also reported that Tiger Woods became the latest big name to join Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player, saying the golf ball should be rolled back. Is Price hinting that bifurcation of the rules between the pros and the everyday game may become the new normal? Maybe Mike Davis is getting tired of taking the heat for all of the USDA screw-ups over the past few years and is looking for a little cover. Having an internationally recognized former major champion in your corner may help deflect some of the attention away from Mike. Whatever the reason, Price is on the committee. Having a well-respected Hall of Famer helping deliver the message will make it easier. Will make it an easier sell if it comes down to that. So, Carlos, why is Nick Price on that executive committee? I don't know. I like I say, I think the sides are really lining up on this short and the ball thing. Some real serious golf people, you know, I talk to them, and they really think the golf ball needs to be rolled back also. I've kind of been on the fence over time, but I think we're jumping at straws here. I know that guys are hitting it farther, and the ball probably is part of the problem, but do you think they had a problem back when they went from feathery to gutta percha? Or they went from the gutta percha to the rubber? I mean, that was like humongous. They call those things a bouncing Betty, you know, because when they hit those things on a firm fairway, those rubber balls, they would roll forever, which, you know, a feathery or even a gutta percha, they just didn't roll that much. They went on just kind of plop down like a sack of wheat or something. So, this is just another moment in time, Carlos. We don't need to have a knee jerk and change a lot of stuff. The average golfer is not hitting it that much farther. You know, yeah, some pros are, and yeah, 325 yards seems like a lot, but it's like everything else. We got used to $1 million, saying $1 million or $1 billion. We'll get used to saying 300, 400 yards, I guess. They still got to get the ball in the hole, Carlos.
You know, Whitney Houston is right now rolling back on her grave when you said this is a moment in time. This is not a moment. It's not a moment in time. And they should roll it back. But we'll talk about that. Jump over the fence. Come back to us here and let's roll it back and talk about that. But like you said, we're going to talk about this next week. So I'll hold on for my arguments next week so you don't want to miss it. Should Fred jump the fence and come to us and talk about rolling the ball back, or he will stay on that other side of the fence and say, yes, we can't roll it back. Let's make it even farther than that. Anyway, let's talk about after one of the great disasters in modern major history, the beleaguered Evian Championship will be moving back to a summer date by 2019, according to the man who switched it, LPGA commish Michael Wan. I mean, we all understand that keeping sponsors happy is not an easy proposition, given the premium that they're paying. But when it comes to majors, we rarely have to deal with the bill payers. In elevating the Evian to major status, even when the tour already had four, the golf gods have worked diligently to make that decision look bad. After first round play of this year's Evian was called at 10 a.m. due to rain and the slate wiped clean, the understandable griping began. But speaking to Damon Hack of Morning Drive, Michael Wan admitted this year's rain shortened event has him rethinking things. You might remember that with bad weather plaguing the Evian Championship again in September, Wan faced criticism over his decision to scrub scores from the first round in France and then to shorten the major championship to 54 holes. Wan said he's going to make a significant schedule change in hopes of improving tournament conditions. He pledged that they will get the Evian back to a summer date. It might not be in 2018, but it will certainly be by 2019. Wan said he believes in Evian as an LPGA major. He does. But he regrets his decision to move the event to September with its rainy season and its shorter days. He also said that the challenges they faced are man-made and that he's the man who made them. Wow, that's a big statement. I have to say, I remember when you interviewed him, and we have followed his career and all the moves that he has said, and that he has followed on the LPGA and the way that he has taken them to new levels. And I have to say, this is what true leaders are made of. I mean, they take accountability for the decisions, and they do whatever they have to do to correct it. And that's why Michael won is where he is. But coming back to the tournament, while this was a credibility-killing moment for the Evian and the LPGA Tour's bid to force unwanted major status on us since 2013, the episode also reminds us that for all our quibbles with the various majors, they have earned credibility by insisting on playing 72 holes and never shaping the conclusion around a parachutist. Fred, kudos to Michael Wan for finally coming around and admitting to the mistake. If we could only get the USGA to do the same, Fred.
Yeah, there's a couple different. That's a whole different ballgame there, isn't it? Yeah, you know, Michael said, you know, I wanted it in September. I wanted it a big field. We had shorter days. We had too many players. It just didn't work. But, you know, like you say, he stepped up and missed the mistake, and they're going to correct it. So kudos to them for doing that, because it just wasn't working as it was. It was like the Champions Tour in their playoffs. It was becoming a joke. Carlos, we've got some good news here. Gene Sowers, who turned professional in 1984, that's a long time ago, competed on the PGA Tour through the 1995 season. He won three events on the regular tour, the 1986 Bank of Boston Classic. In 89, he won the Sony Open in Hawaii, and in 1990, he won the Sanderson Farms. He jumped back and forth on web.com and the PGA Tours from 99 to 2001 as he got a little older, but he regained full status on the big tour after his fourth career victory at the 2002 Air Canada Championship. But life has a way of getting in the road. In 2005, Sowers was misdiagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, but it was really Stevens-Johnson syndrome, which is a very rare and very painful skin condition. It even got worse when clogged blood vessels in his arms and legs caused his skin to burn from the inside out. I can't even imagine. It makes me hurt to even say this stuff. Yeah. This thing only had a 25% chance of survival rate. I mean, this was going to kill him. He was forced to take 7 years away from competitive golf and had to undergo several skin grafts, at which you can still see the scars in his forearms. Sowers did return to competition in 2011 and 2012, playing a limited schedule on the web.com tour before turning 50 in August of 2012. So now he's been on the Champions Tour for a few years. He's finished inside the top 25 in the Charles Schwab Cup standings, three of his first four seasons. He won his biggest event of his career at the 2016 U.S. Senior Open right down the road here at Florida Country Club in Columbus, Ohio. The PGA Tour Courage Award certainly pertains to Gene Sowers. The Courage Award is presented to a player who, through courage and perseverance, has overcome extraordinary adversity, such as personal tragedy or debilitating injury or illness, to make a significant and meaningful contribution to the game of golf. Sowers is the third ever recipient of the Courage Award, joining Eric Compton and Gerald Lyle, who received the award in 2013 and 2015. It's difficult to play golf and compete at the highest levels of the sport, but when you're afflicted with severe physical ailment, it just becomes even more so. So we want to sincerely congratulate Gene Sowers on winning this award. He is definitely a worthy candidate, and we want to wish him all the best going forward. Carlos?
Definitely. Definitely a worthy candidate. Our congratulations to him, and our hats off to a great man, a great player, Gene Sowers. Hey, Fred, who said golf manufacturers are on their way to the grave? Who said that? AccuSnet Holdings Corp., who has a fitting ticker, as golf there on the stock market. Last Wednesday reported a third quarter net income of $9.3 million after reporting loss in the same period a year earlier. The Fairhaven, Massachusetts-based company said it had profit of 12 cents per share, and those results exceeded Wall Street expectations. The average estimate of 12 analysts surveyed by Sachs Investment Research was for earnings of 9 cents per share. So that's 3 cents more per share. The golf products maker posted a revenue of $347.3 million in the period, also beating street forecasts. 10 analysts surveyed by Sachs expected $339.7 million, so that's $8.6 million more. Akersnet expects a full-year revenue in the range of $1.55 billion to $1.56. Their shares have declined slightly, more than 7% since the beginning of the year. In the final minutes of trading that Wednesday, shares hit $18.26, which is rising slightly in the last 12 months. If you're an investor and would like to know more about this, the results are available via the Akersnet Investor Relations and the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission websites. That's for all of you like Fred that has all these investments and have a lot of money to invest. So there you go. You can invest in them. But in another news from Akersnet, this time from one of its brands, I have to say, Fred, while you never want to see how the sausage is made, if you're a golfer, you almost certainly want to see how the 4v1 is made. Until now, however, only a very limited group of professionals, industry folks like Fred, and only truly fortunate media members have had the opportunity to do so. But starting November 20, one of the golf equipment industry sanctum sanctorums, the Titleist Ball Plant Number 3, is opening its doors to the public. Titleist has manufactured balls at the New Bedford, Massachusetts facility for more than 80 years. That is the same location where company founder Phil Young developed the first Titleist golf ball in 1935. The company is calling the tour Titleist Golf Ball Experience. And while it's technically open to the public, Titleist is offering the one-of-a-kind experience exclusively to Team Titleist members. Fred, for the first time, the public will be able to get a first-hand look at the history and processes behind the best-selling golf balls in the world. And I tell you, on my next time in Boston, I will drive south to the town of New Bedford and enjoy this tour. You know, I never knew that Akersnet was actually the name of a river and the town that lies on it, which is on the east of New Bedford. And that it was back in 1910 that Akersnet Process Company, which is now the Akersnet Company, was founded in the town and continues to be one of southeastern Massachusetts' most enduring industries. So, Fred, there was a little piece of history there for all the golfaholics and bike niners.
Yeah, I like that. That was cool. I like the way to throw that in there. That was a great little tidbit. Hey, Carlos, you know, we talk about the different things that tour pros go through, and, you know, we just see them competing on TV, and we don't get the backstory all the time. So when we get a chance, we like to talk about that a little bit. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the young players. This is the time of the year that the Web.com Tour and the PGA Tour hopefuls try to earn their way onto these tours for next year. Second stage of the Web.com Tour Q School was held at 5 locations around the country, with the final stage to be held in a couple weeks. Cameron Champ is one of those young guys. He had one more semester remaining on his college eligibility at Texas A&M, but decided to turn professional and was granted an exemption into the Old Classic at Mayakoba last week. He missed the cut with a 75-73, but can be excused because even though he's a youngster, he had to be feeling a little drained as he had just come through the second stage Q school the week prior. Champ jumped into the national golf spotlight last summer by recording a 337-yard driving average at the U.S. Open. He ultimately finished T32 at Erin Hills, which gave him the exemption into stage two. he has sponsors clamoring for him to play in their events. Champ also missed the cut at the Savory Classic a little bit earlier in the wraparound schedule, but will look to improve at St. Simon's Island this week and get ready for the final stage of Q School. On the other end of the spectrum, A.J. McInerney, the young professional that was caught up in the Las Vegas shooting a few weeks ago, was granted a sponsor's exemption into the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open and posted a strong finish with a T10, which exempted him into the Old Classic last week. The 24-year-old McInerney did not have a stellar year on the Web.com Tour last season. He missed 10 of 21 cuts, posted only three top 25s. His best was a T11 in July. Before that, he had missed six consecutive cuts, and after that T11, he missed five more cuts to end the season. So, second stage of Q School conflicted with the Old Classic, and so McInerney decided his time would be better served playing in Q School to earn his card outright for the Web.com Tour next season. He failed to make it through, however, with rounds of 71, 75, 78, 73. He finished at one over par, six shots short of the five under required to make the cut and move on to final stage, which will be held December 7th through the 10th in Chandler, Arizona. Carlos, this just shows you how difficult it is to even make it to the Web.com Tour, let alone the PGA Tour. The winner of the Stage 2 event that McInerney attended in Texas posted 22 under par for the four rounds. Here is McInerney. I mean, he's obviously playing well with a T10 on the PGA Tour and can't get through a qualifying event for the Web.com Tour the following week, finishes 23 shots behind the winner. Without status on the Web.com or PGA Tours, he will attempt to Monday qualify to earn spots in the field next season. And I only know of one guy that has made that work with any success over the past few years, and that was Patrick Reed, who eventually made it to the PGA Tour and has made his mark on tour. Monday qualifying is a tough, tough way to go. So here you have the story of two different guys. Champ really is kind of on the fast track to make it to the tour, going to be on the Web.com, and then probably will be on the PGA Tour next year. And you got a guy like McInerney who's kind of struggling at the moment and really doesn't have any place to play next year, so it's going to be tough for him. So the PGA Tour guys that have had long careers on the tour make it look easy, but it's anything but that, especially for young guys trying to get there in the first place, Carlos.
Definitely, it's really, really tough, and that's why we are on top of that and many more things. With that, we'll wrap up our Par 5 news. Now it's here. It's time for the practice range, where every week, Fred and I pick a topic. Each one of us take our own shots at it, and this week is a hot one. It's a big one. It's gender bias in teaching women, young girls, or opposite sex. Let's set up this. I mean, Pete Cowan's statement, he said that he won't work with women students because of the fear that this could lead to a potential sexual harassment claim. So the topic would be, are young women being deprived of access to the best golf instructors due to gender bias or fear of lawsuit claiming sexual harassment if student is dissatisfied with the teacher? Function of our litigious society and social media and instant access to everything gets a lot of these things up in the air immediately, and there's some sort of non-investigative issues being around this. I mean, this topic is so important that we have not one, not two, not three, we have four VIGs that will weigh in and give their opinions on the subject of gender bias or the fear of teaching golf to the opposite sex. And from there, Fred and I will take over and give our own opinions on different subjects on that. But first, let's introduce who you're going to be listening to in a few minutes. First is going to be Global Golf Post senior writer Steve Eubanks, who has a very talented daughter that has been receiving instruction from Paul Azinger. He feels it is all about trusting the teacher. The LPGA Tour professional and LPGA teacher, Wendy Doolin, gives her thoughts and has experienced both sides of the issue as a teacher, as a student, also over the years. Plus, 2014 PGA National Teacher of the Year, Kathy Gildersleeves-Jensen, who feels the internet has added to everyone being so sensitive to this type of issues. So, Fred, let's play that interview, and after that, we'll talk a little bit about something else before we pass it on to you. So let's start with the VAGs.
Yeah, you set it up perfectly.
We're talking with Steve Eubanks, who's a senior writer for Global Golf Post. And Steve has a daughter who is being very successful as a high school golfer and looking to go to college and progress her golfing career. And last week, Loane Mayer had an article in Global Golf Post that Pete Cowan, famous European golf coach, kind of refuses to work with young women to avoid any possible sexual conflict. And Steve, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Could you give us what you're thinking and how, as a parent and a father, you approach that situation?
Well, look, I mean, I get it. I get Pete's position. He is a very, if you've ever seen him coach, he's extremely hands-on. He will grab you. He will pull you. He will do a lot of dynamic things to get you in the right position. And so when it comes to the laying on of hands, I understand that he has a position where, look, he just don't want to leave himself open to any misconceptions or to any future charges that he may have done anything inappropriate. So I get it. I think it's all a function of trust. Paul Azinger is my best friend. He views my daughter as he does his daughter. So it isn't a I would have no trouble. In fact, I do have no trouble leaving my daughter in his care for however long he wants to keep her. And I feel that way about a number of people, a number of top instructors that I would trust implicitly with my daughters. I think it's up to the individual, and it's just a matter of, do you trust this person?
You follow the LPGA Tour very closely for Global Golf Post. You go to a lot of the tournaments. As a matter of fact, you're on your way to the CME Globe Championship down in Naples this week. And do you feel like the young women on the LPGA Tour maybe don't get some of the best coaching because of the male-woman kind of thing?
With the exception of Pete, I don't think so. But I say that. I mean, Butch Harmon has only had one of, well, really two. He coached Natalie Gulbis for a while and Suzanne Pedersen for a while. But that's it. But Butch primarily sticks with the men. And that's not to say that he wouldn't take on more women, but he just hasn't. And you'll have to ask him as to why. But I think that I haven't seen a top-level LPGA player not get an instructor that she wanted, put it that way. Now, do they flock to the LPGA Tour? No, they don't. I don't think that this issue of potential for sexual harassment accusations has much to do with that.
We're chatting with Wendy Doolin, who is a former LPGA Tour professional and also a longtime teacher in the Florida area. And they were asking the question, Pete Cowan says he tries not to teach young women to try and avoid any sexual conflict because he likes to put his hands on his students and move them around different positions. And we're asking other teachers, have you ever had that problem? Is that a concern for you? Have you thought about that?
No, it's not a concern, really. I've had teachers put their hands on me. And one thing that we're taught through the LPGA is that if you ask your student, is it okay to put my hands on? Is it okay for me to move you? It's not a problem, which I learned that through the LPGA teaching education. But as a player also, I never really had a problem. I mean, I always had male teachers, never had a problem with it. Obviously, he must have a concern from some aspect, or maybe he has got a bit of a scare or something. I'm not really sure why he might have said that. But if he's worried about it, I guess he shouldn't do it. But I haven't had a problem with it.
Do you feel that maybe LPGA tour players or young women in general, male teachers are not working with them, and maybe they are not able to get the best teaching possible? It has happened maybe over the years?
No, I don't. I really don't know anybody that has not taught somebody because of their gender, and I don't not teach somebody because of their gender. I think teachers connect with different players, and there are people that teach going to connect better with men, and there are people that teach are going to connect better with women, but I don't think it's a subject that is really an issue, for me at least.
We're talking with Kathy Gildersleeve-Jensen, National PGA Teacher of the Year in 2014. As a teacher, a longtime teacher, what is your feeling on this issue? Have you ever had a problem with that? Has it ever been a concern for you working with either gender on the golf range?
No, I think it's how you do the communication part. Mine's really not hands-on. I use a lot of training tools to alleviate that if they're uncomfortable. And I have to, and you ask the person. Make sure it's a mutual understanding before whatever you have to do, and if it's on the same page of golf, we're good. That's the big thing. And as far as either gender or race or ages, it really doesn't matter. They're people. We just need to help them out with their golf game. Growing the game in the female sector is huge. We need that. We need that support from them so they can have their kids come play in the golf game. But it just depends. I see the culture shift. I see the paradigm culture shift happening, and I'm still doing the same thing. Got to ask permission. You have to respect their area, and then adjust between them. That's kind of how I work it.
Have you ever talked to another teacher, male or female, that said, you know, they really don't like working with men or women or one or the other, or for some reason that they just kind of shy away from it?
I don't think they shy away from it. I haven't never seen that, but I think there's, because of the internet and the talk out there, it makes everybody hesitant on both genders. It makes us more aware of what has been happening. Do we change it? How we approach things? Those are very instrumental in our days of life. We're not sure how to handle this change, and it needs to happen. There's no question. But I think that everybody respects each other and is nice to each other. We can all get along in this world. And I think growing the game is, it's really about getting that ball up in the air and out there. I haven't really experienced it vocally between people, but I do see it on the internet.
There you have it. Those were our three VIGs initially, but we have one more. And that's because another thing that comes to mind is that we have not heard much of this from outside of the U.S. This could be due to the focus, of course, of our media with our local issues, and that's understandably so. So people want to hear about what is close to them. So we wanted to hear from someone outside of the States, especially in Europe, and have his opinion on today's subject and tell us if it's something that we are just hearing here. Is it happening only in the States? And who better for this than our friend and colleague, the European golf guru Kieran Clark, who is in Scotland and taped also his answer to tackle on this. We asked him, and he graciously recorded this piece, giving us his take on it. So let's listen to Kieran Clark and what he has to say on that.
Hi, Fred, Carlos. Yes, in recent weeks, it does seem that the news has been completely engulfed by these ongoing sexual harassment scandals in the world of politics and the Hollywood film and television industries. But it hasn't just been an American phenomenon, which I'm sure you're both relieved to hear. We have our own share of oddballs abusing power in the UK. Indeed, the British Parliament has actually been facing growing calls of discontent from female journalists, politicians and political aides who have accused several leading figures of harassment and inappropriate behaviour. These allegations have actually led to the resignation recently of Sir Michael Fallon, who was the UK Defence Secretary and one of the most senior figures in the British government. So this isn't a Hollywood or political issue, but rather a societal one that rears its ugly head in all walks of life. These recent incidents are, of course, more high profile, and it's certainly long overdue that the subject is being addressed in this manner, and thankfully that is of course now changing, which can only be a good thing. But I was certainly struck by the comments of Pete Cowan in that interview in the Global Golf Post with Lewis Mayer. You know, Pete is one of the most respected and admired coaches in the game, and there is certainly a lot to like about him, but I did shake my head when reading his remarks and why he hasn't taken on female students. You know, it's nothing to do with political correctness, but rather it's about making people accountable for their own behaviour. And fearing litigation and harassment allegations should a partnership or a relationship not work out, it does seem to be a rather unfortunate and paranoid view of the opposite gender. And Fred will know better than I will on this subject, but teaching golf can be a rather intimate process with close contact, touching of the hips, shoulders, etc., to give the student a feel for positions. That's what you kind of expect to happen. And now, I don't really see why that must be different between a male coach and a man or woman, or even a child. The teacher wants the player to feel comfortable with the process, as they won't learn otherwise. And again, the secret to that, as it is in pretty much all areas, is communication and an understanding boundaries. That is only common sense, and I would suggest that most professionals at clubs, ranges, or golf centres already adhere to that. They can develop a trust with the player, and in the case of children, their parents too. But that should be the case with any student in any sport and just any walk of life. And you know, many other coaches have worked with the game's best female players, and I'm yet to hear of any harassment allegations made against any of them. It seems to me to be a rather lame excuse from Pete Cowan, and one that does suggest a lack of understanding and maybe even a lack of experience with female players. Yes, it would be terrific, obviously, if more high-profile coaches were women, and that's something I certainly hope will happen in the coming years, but I don't think it's necessary to be a solution to the dynamic of male coaches and female players. Ultimately, we should all be able to work together, and the key to that, again, is communication and understanding boundaries. And but of course, that would be the case if it was a manager in an office, a Hollywood producer, and indeed a golf coach. That's a lesson for everyone, and only those who don't respect the other person have anything to worry about.
There you have it. That was Kieran Clark, the European golf guru, our friend and colleague. And as Steve mentioned, Butch Harmon has only worked with a couple of high-profile women pros, but Gary Gilchrist seems to be the teacher of choice for most LPGA women. Gilchrist has worked with a host of top-name LPGA Tour players. David Ledbetter, well, he has also coached several women players, and through his academy has trained women golfers. Most recently, we can talk about Lydia Ko and Michelle Wee. Hank Haney is known for his work with men, but he has also had women pupils. Fred, as a teaching pro that you are, a long-standing one, tell us about your teaching experience with women, men, boys, and girls, and what's your take on all this?
Well, you know, I found all these comments that our guests made tonight really interesting, and Kieran, I thought, really did an excellent job of summarizing the whole thing. It really wrapped it up. But everyone needs their own space, and you know, we must always be cognizant of not making the student uncomfortable. The student's mind will shut down and all learning will stop if something becomes out of the norm or something is bothering them. So, and I know in my own situation, I'm much more aware of the student's well-being or mindset when I'm working with a woman or young lady. Women's minds seemingly are always going 100 miles an hour, and to keep them from freezing up physically, you have to stay one step ahead and keep their mind free of additional clutter. So I really don't use my hands that much. In touching, I use maybe a golf club to point out various positions or move the shoulder or hip or knee into the correct position. I also use demonstration more, showing the correct posture or alignment rather than a physical touching. So every situation is different, Carlos. You can't, it's hard to generalize, but I guess the general statement would be that I do not do a lot of touching when I teach. I never have. I've always been aware of avoiding any problems with a student, whether it's a gentleman, an older gentleman, a young boy, a young girl, a woman, whatever. I don't want them to feel uncomfortable because we want a learning situation. I'm always trying to think of the best way to convey, to communicate to them what I'm trying to get them to do and the feel that I want them to have. And so I don't want them worried about something else. And touching to me is, it could be a diversion. So to Carlos, to answer your question, it's never been a problem, but I am cognizant of it. And I don't do a lot of touching myself. But, for you as a golfer or someone who may go to a coach, what's like the most important aspect do you think that would alleviate any potential problem between men and women or whatever?
Well, let's put this into perspective and talk about what sexual harassment allegations are. We have two topics sometimes that we talk about, and people try to intertwine them. It's like sexism, but sexism is different because it involves seeing and treating women differently because simply they're women. But sexual harassment is different. In most cases, to extract sexual favors from the person, which usually is a woman. It's not only women, also men that are being harassed and used threats as the basis for forcing that compliance. In some instances, the threats are direct. In other cases, given the power differential between, let's say, a boss and an employee, they may be unspoken, but nevertheless, they're quite powerful. The greater the power differential, I think there's the greater the possibility for abuse. When women are sexually harassed, they are often silent for several reasons. One, they may feel shamed even though they did nothing to elicit harassment. Second, they may doubt whether their allegations will be believed or seen as important. Third, they may feel, sometimes quite rightly, that speaking out will call forth recriminations towards them. So once again, feminist moral theory is concerned with bringing the problem to light and then looking for ways of alleviating the problem. As we have seen for this recent flood of accusation to high-profile men in the entertainment and the politics, this right now of bringing to light and then looking for alleviating the problem is being successful to a degree, whether all claims are true or false, which I don't think all are true. I mean, there has to be some truth. There is a problem, yes, but not all are true for sure. If bringing light, and I know that that's going to ruffle some feathers, that's what I said there, but we'll talk a little bit about that in my next contribution. But if bringing to light the problem is the way of alleviating, that is where Pete Collins' remarks catch more relevance than ever. I understand what Kieran says, but in what you're saying, Fred, but not everyone. Coaches in sports, whether it's golf, tennis, gymnastics, boxing, or so many other sports, they need to have some physical contact most of the time. You don't do it. But in order to place the student in the right position, I know you use a club, but to me, using that stick or club to touch the part you need them to move just doesn't cut it. They don't always are going to be at the position that you want them to be. So you might accidentally touch a student even slightly the wrong way, and then you start to fear whether this will lead to an allegation and the end of your career and reputation as it stands. Like Kathy was saying, the internet right now, everything just goes out. And what's happening? You don't have a way to say, sorry, hey, it's not as they're saying. There's no way you can defend yourself because all of a sudden, everybody's going to be against you. I mean, I have to agree that trust is the number one element to try to alleviate this. But even then, you still have to fear the worst of all the time, given the way things are going. I guess you have to be upfront with your student. And in case of being a girl or a boy, in this case, you have to be upfront with their parents. Let them see what happens and how you conduct yourself. Possibly having even assistance That reminds me of what the gynecologists do. They have to have somebody watching over the process so that you can have someone to back up your story in case anything would happen. So those claims are not baseless. But I really don't see a short-term solution yet for alleviating this, because the alleviation by bringing it to light is just starting. And once we see where this peaks and stabilizes, then I think we'll start to see what will be the new trend with regards how to act while teaching or even talking. Fred, maybe we will end up not teaching female students or boys or even – remember, this is not only – we're talking about women because that's the most cases, but even guys or boys have reported harassments as well. So I don't see an easy solution yet here, Fred. But I have to ask you, following up on this and what the VIG said, and what is your personal opinion on what is going on?
Well, both Kathy Jensen and Wendy Doolin mentioned in their interview that communication and asking a student if it's okay to maybe put your hand or move them into the right position, it seems to be like the single most important item that they use and consider. Steve Eubanks, like you, also said that as a parent, he has to have trust in the teacher before he would be comfortable with them working with his daughter or child. And I think that would hold true for any father. Kieran also mentioned communication and in talking with the student and making sure that everybody was on board with what you're trying to do. So that was a real common theme among all of them. From my own personal feeling, I try to treat the student like I would want to be treated. I really do not want someone grabbing me or pushing me about. Help me get into the right positions, but there are ways to do that without using a lot of pushing and shoving. It can be much more subtle and much more easy to do. So, Carlos, I don't know. I've got some other thoughts, but I know you want to talk about maybe try to wrap it up here a little bit. But this is something that's probably not going to be going away. It's just a heightened awareness right now with all the stuff that's going around in the world. We're not saying this is a problem in golf, but we just thought we'd address it because Pete Cowan brought it up, and we found it unique that a high-profile golf teacher would take that stance that he wouldn't even want to work with a female student because of a potential problem. So, Carlos, I'll flip it back to you.
Yeah, I still see a problem. It's a catch-22, right? Given today's litigious society, and that's threatening to sue someone for every little thing, this issue is not going away anytime soon and may become even more of a factor. I mean, Pete Cowan, I know he has come under fire for those comments. He's a coach to big-name stars such as Sergio Garcia, Henrik Stenson, Louis Hyson, and Lee Westwood. He said that he and others in the industry, not only him, he's saying that he and others in the industry are wary of taking on female pros for the fear of being accused of sexual harassment if the relationship got sour. I mean, it's not like he's the one that whom no teaching professional has more in a way of top clients on the PGA and the European tours. And he has turned down a number of invitations to coach some high flyers among the women. To keep things simple, he tells them that he does not have time. And the full story, however, is that even if he did have time off his hands, he would not have to have any women on his books. So I understand him, like Steve Evans was saying. I understand him, and I think there's a problem that needs to be addressed. I understand there's a problem with this sexual harassment situation, but I don't see it as big as it's becoming, and that's why I know that this is maybe controversial to say, but there are some of those allegations that are just not true. There has to be some people there that are just looking for their 15 seconds of fame, and that's where it has to start to be taken seriously, because if somebody comes all of a sudden and starts saying things on the internet about you or about me or about whoever, it goes viral,
and there is no stopping on it. We have to come both and give both the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I understand there's a problem that needs to be addressed. I am a father of a girl as well, and I would never like for her to go through that. I'm serious. I understand that. But also have to be on the other side. If I'm not doing anything wrong, and just because a relationship goes bad, and then you start to try to get back at me because you know you're going to gain some advantage because of that, then that is as wrong as the one that's trying to get those sexual favors from you and trying to harass you, Fred. So with that, I'll wrap it up. And any final comments from you before we close?
Yeah, just the only comment I want to make, that I really feel that the real big problem here is that in the past, you know, pre-social media, back in the dark ages, if someone wanted to talk about a problem, they would air it out with a friend, a relative, or maybe even their pastor. Well, not today. We go straight to the Internet. And just like TV, if we see it on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, it has to be true, right? Well, this can create problems for everybody involved. So, unfortunately, I guess it's kind of a sign of the times, and each of us has to be aware and be smart in what we do, Carlos. That's the only comments that I have right now.
And with that, we wrap up the practice range. Hope you like our exposure of this. We truly understand there is a problem that needs to be addressed. We're by no means trying to demeanor this. It's a problem out there, but we have to be, like you said very well, we have to be cognizant about it and talk freely about what's going on, gain our trust, and overall, better communication. With that, we wrap up our practice range for every week. Fred and I pick a topic, and each of us take our own shots at it. Now we're going to have our final putts. We're about to close the show, but as usual, we have some final short tidbits here. And I usually start, and I'm going to tell you that the PGA Championship will return to Valhalla Golf Club in 2024. That's according to a report from the Louisville Courier-Journal. Per the report, an official announcement is scheduled for Thursday. This will give the Bluegrass State two PGA Tour events in 2024, where the Barbasol Championship is held the same week as the British Open that has now been relocated, started next summer. Valhalla, which is owned by the PGA of America, previously hosted the PGA Championship in 1996, 2000, and 2014. And the former president of the PGA of America, Teddy Bishop, who suggested Valhalla as a permanent site for the tournament in August in an essay he did on MorningRead.com, expressed surprise on Friday that the cost benefits of staging the event at the PGA-owned facility had not prompted an earlier return date. Actually, he said that it should be there all the time. But now, moving the tournament to May is a decision motivated in part to avoid a conflict with the Summer Olympics. But that could create some new challenges. You know, it will be May when the NBA and the NHL playoffs will be overlapping the tournament. And on Saturday, of course, I'm not going to watch it because I'm going to be watching the Preakness Stakes, which is the second leg of the Thoroughbreds Racing Triple Crown. So there's a lot of competition for that. So we'll see in the next few years how that's going to round up. It's going to be really interesting to see if the ratings would go down if they would like to move it again. In another piece of news, a couple of injured players are hopeful for return to action. Brent Snedeker, well, we already saw that he has been following Tiger's routine of tweeting videos, hitting irons. I think he saw it and he said, hey, I can do this too. But he's scheduled to play in this week's RSM Classic, which will be his first start on the PGA Tour since June when he was sidelined by a sternum injury. Last month, he resumed golf activity after undergoing treatment for the injury that forced him to miss the FedEx Cup playoffs and the year's two final majors. Also, Paula Creamer, the Pink Panther, will return from wrist surgery as one of the headliners at the third annual Diamond Resorts Invitational to be played at the Tranquilo Golf Club at the Four Seasons Resort in Orlando at Disney World Resort on January 12th to the 14th. Creamer told GolfChannel.com Tuesday that she's excited to get a chance to test herself in competition before the LPGA season begins in earnest next year. She will be making her first appearance in the 54-hole event, which is a mixed tour competition that will feature LPGA pros, PGA Tour champions, pros, and celebrities. And finally, but not least, the PGA Tour softened its stance and pushed its November 1st deadline, and given the Colonial Country Club board a month, the club has until December 1st now to find sponsors and raise money to ensure that the 2018 PGA event in Fort Worth will go on as scheduled. Fred, right now, the 2018 Dean DeLuca Invitational is listed by the PGA Tour on its website for the week of May 21 to the 27th. So, clock is ticking, Fred. Clock is ticking.
Yeah, they're under the gun there to get something done. Hey, last week we talked about the Shark Experience that he rolled out, and the media response over the past week has been quite underwhelming. I mean, it just has been literally no chatter about it up to this point, but I'm sure after the PGA
even
show
when
in January,
we reported it,
I know you'd think it'd be all a buzz, wouldn't you? But you know,
yeah.
I'm sure after the PGA show in January, everybody will get a chance to play around with it and look at it. You know, it'll probably get some more buzz. But however, Greg Norman did announce the field for the QBE Shootout, his annual charity event in Naples, and Lexi Thompson will pair with Tony Finau to make a big hitting team. You've also got involved, you got Harris English going to be with Matt Kuchar, Brant Snedeker is going to be with Bubba, Charlie Hoffman and Zach Johnson are together, Kevin Chappell's playing with Kevin Kisner. Besides Finau and Thompson, you got Daniel Berger, Gary Woodland, Jason Duffner is with Billy Horschel, Brian Harman is with Pat Perez, Russell Henley and Kyle Stanley are paired together, Sean O'Hare with Steve Stricker, Keegan Bradley with Brendan Steele, and Shane Lowry is with Graham McDowell. So that'll be coming up here in December. Steve Williams, we all remember him. He's now 53. He plans to make next year, with 2018, his final year of caddying, but he is pondering a move into broadcasting. Steve said, next year will probably be my last year of caddying. The only reason I'd like to caddy next year is that it's sort of a personal milestone. It'll be my 40th year. I'll caddy in a few tournaments. I'm not sure who for yet, but I'll just caddy a handful of tournaments next year, and that'll be it. On the idea of turning to broadcasting, he added, you don't say no to anything. So, then. And win the tournament. They're looking to fill a variety of jobs, which will be held April 5th through the 8th. Opportunities include positions in concessions, culinary housekeeping, hospitality, and retail. So if you're interested, go to jobs.augusta.com, and applications are now available. So, Carlos, if you want to go to the Masters and get a job, visit that website, and they'll sign you right up. So, Golfaholics, be sure and visit OhioGolfJournal.com. And if you got Roku, check out Back 9 Report TV.
Okay, it's the Masters, Jobs, and...
you got to go to jobs.augusta.com.
Okay, I got it. Okay, I'll after we finish this. Okay, good.
Okay.
Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIGs, very important guests of the week, Steve Eubanks, Wendy Doolin, Kathy Gildersleeve-Jensen, and Kieran Clark.
Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. If you missed it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. And like Fred said, also on Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for coming in, Mr. Mahoney. Do you have your member ID card?
Yep, I have it right here in the FEP Blue app. See?
Great.
It's awesome. The app can also help me find a provider and keep tabs on my deductibles.
Okay, can I?
Oh, yeah, and my out-of-pocket spending and visit limits, and I can call the nurse line.
I'm really glad it does all that, but I only need to see your member ID card.
Oh, that's it? Why didn't you say so?
Fearless is just one tap away. With the new FEP Blue app from Blue Cross and Blue Shield, you can access your health benefits on the go. Download it now at fepblue.org/app.